All right, again, welcome everybody. What we're going to do today, I'm just going to lay out what's before us. We're going to go through some introductions, let's go around and say who you are and who you represent. We'll also give a chance for the audience to check in that regard as well. And then I'm going to explain the process that we have before us, how I see the working group working out over the next month or two, and also just spend a few minutes talking about what my rationale is for why this bill at this time. So I have some context for it, not as a point of discussion, but just so you understand where I'm coming from. And if other people want to make a couple comments, are welcome to do so as well. But let's start off, first off, with introductions. Again, I'm Sheldon Johnson. I chair the Telecommunications Committee. And to my left, and we'll just go around, is a new guy on the block who took over for Elizabeth Emerson, the former CA, and I'll let him introduce himself.
Hi, guys. My name is John Reich. I'm just recently hired new CA for the Commerce and Labor Committee and also for the Telecom Regulation and Infrastructure Division. Took over, as you said, for Elizabeth Emerson, who I'm sure you've all got to work with over the last 10 months, and look forward to working with all of you in the coming months and the coming sessions. So I'm at her old office and have her old number, and so it's just going to be me on the other line instead of her. So that's pretty much it.
I'm David Sullivan with DSL Research in the House.
I'm Joel Hoppe. I'm the state representative from Chaska.
I'm Tucker Carlson with Charter Communications. We're the second largest cable company, and we represent most of the upstate communities, about 200 communities throughout the state of Minnesota.
I'm Eric Coleman. I'm with Comcast of Minnesota and Wisconsin.
I'm Mike Martin. I'm executive director of the Minnesota Cable Communications Association.
My name is Andy Schreiner. I'm with Quest.
Joanne Johnson, Frontier Communications.
Rita Saylor, I'm District 2B.
Ian Marsh, Republican Caucus Research.
Diane Wells, Department of Commerce.
Mark Oberlander, Minnesota PUC.
Randy Young, the Minnesota Association for Rural Telecommunications.
Karen Higgins, League of Cities.
Jeff Leder, City of Lakeville, and the President of Minnesota Association of Community Telecommunications Administrators.
I'm Mike Watsonar. I'm with St. Paul Neighborhood Network, and I'm also on the National Board of the Alliance for Community Media, representing public access organizations around the country.
Sandy Mason, and I represent 13A.
Bob Eliff with the Health Research Department.
All right, very good. And let's also give a chance for folks up in the audience to just identify yourself. And if you want to say who you're with, that'd be fantastic too, but go ahead and start anywhere there and who you are, who you're with.
I'm with the Ramsey Washington.
Greg Moore with the Northwest Suburban Cable Commission.
Cora Wilson, North Suburban Cable Commission, based in Roseville, 3010 City.
Darrell Ed with the City of Indianapolis.
David Ass, Dakota County and Twin City Regional Broadband.
I'm Jim Kelly, City of Burnsville.
Michael Miller, City of St. Cloud.
Brian Grogan, Boston Barnett.
Mike Martin with City of Capitol.
Mike Reardon, City of St. Paul.
Cody Miller, NDC4 Cable Commission and NASA.
Sarah Fitch with McGrann City Law Firm, works in NASA.
Aaron Swanson with the Research and Line Time, we represent Quest.
Dick Moore, representing the Northwest Cable Communications Association.
Kim Roden, the A-Job Contact, the Union Job, elected official, City Council, Victoria, and Minnesota.
Kathy Clucas from Bark Corporation.
Sandra Boone, Senate DFL Research.
All right, very good. And we have one person coming in here. We're just identifying ourselves and where you're from. All right, welcome. Welcome, everyone, to the working group. Let me just give you a little background on how we got to be where we are. For those of you who aren't familiar, I introduced a bill this last spring that would be passed out here shortly when I get done. I just put a few comments. And that's kind of the impetus of the working group we have today. I said it last spring when we were finishing up that we would have a working group to take a look at the bill and review it. And that's what we're going to do. See what kind of changes, alterations, and revisions we might want to make. I want to make clear that this isn't a committee hearing. I don't have the gavel before me, and hopefully I won't need to run up and get it. I'm looking for more of a problem-solving working group where we're going to make some real positive moves towards common ground on some of these tricky, difficult, and important issues that are before us. My goal here is to make good public policy from all angles, to make good public policy and to find agreement on these subject matters that we have common ground as much as possible. So that's the goal of to begin with. Let me just talk about the process that's before us and how I see us moving forward. We're going to spend about 20 minutes or so or less on each of these items that we have before us: franchise fees, municipal services, INET, definition of gross revenues, and there's other agenda items for the other times we meet as well. And during this time, members here are encouraged to share their thoughts, ideas, suggestions as to, again, where we might go with this, what some of the common grounds are, what maybe some of the important issues are to consider that for the constituency or for the group that you represent. And this is time to get that out on the table to air these kind of basic notions. What I don't expect to happen for each of these items today or when we meet in this setting on any of the items, quite frankly, if it does happen, that's fine, but that's not my expectation. That's what I'm waiting for. I'm not waiting for an agreement or a solution or a conclusion today on any of these items. That's not the deal, but rather just have some face time with each other to get out what we think are some of the more important issues and begin talking about in a meaningful way. The big deal is going to be the homework part, and that's what's going to be given to all of us here. And the homework is to get together once we leave, especially the folks here in the working group, and come back to me, or specifically to John, I guess, that I'd like to see in the form of an email, what the areas of agreements are, where you've reached common ground on the issues that, particularly, I'm speaking now of these three issues that we have before us: the franchise fees, municipal services, and definition of gross revenues. What I'm expecting is by December 6th that John here is going to get an email. Who you have send it, I don't really care, but someone who gets that information to John that lays out what the areas of agreement and common ground are on the topic that we have before us. And that'll be the similar format in the other meetings as well. And once John has that information, he'll get that out to the rest of you in the crowd here that are interested in receiving that information. If you let us know, we'll make sure you get that, so our thing stays above board and clear in that respect. So I just want to make clear again what my expectation is. It's, again, not to find solutions, agreements, necessarily here today. In fact, I think that's highly unlikely. But rather, I'm expecting you folks are going to leave, share with each other, spend some time together in one form or another, telephone or getting together, whatever it takes, and then come back together, providing me with some information, John with some information that we can get out to others that will highlight what the areas of what the agreement is on these articles. The long-range goal is to come up with some recommendations that can be used in this bill as the bill moves forward. I mean, that's the goal of this whole thing, is to for this working group to provide recommendations to me, which I'll then, you know, move forward with the committee to talk about and look at possible part and inclusion of the bill, 2351, that we plan on moving forward. Some issues are going to be more complex than others, clearly. But nonetheless, I'm optimistic that with the smart folks we have sitting around the table, that we're going to be able to come to some conclusion on this. And that's the expectation. I think the time is right, and that's where I want to head. And for folks in the audience, it's not meant to exclude you as well. You're encouraged to contact I'm sure you have connections with people at the table. Please let them know what your thoughts and opinions are on this, or if you have some specific ideas, or myself or John as well, so that we can take that into consideration as well. So that kind of lays out where I see us going. We're going to meet again on the 14th, and again by the 6th. I would like to have some information that highlights the agreements on the three areas that we have before us today emailed to John. Let me just say a few words about how we got to be here, or how I got to be here with respect to why I'm presenting this bill and why I think it's important. There's several reasons why I think the time is right to move this bill forward, and again, I'm not offering this as a point of discussion, but more as a point of clarification and acknowledgement that I think we need some revisions to the current statute. First of all, I am interested in more competition, frankly, and all the benefits that can bring. So I'm interested in getting past the monopoly situation and bringing more competition into to consumers. And I'm also as interested, or very much interested, in speeding up the deployment of the broadband facilities and services throughout the state. So in conjunction with the whole idea of competition, I want to see the extent to which the bill can serve as a vehicle to speed up broadband services and facilities throughout the state. And I guess that's very important to me. The second thing I want to mention is, having reviewed Chapter 238 and talked to other people and different opinions and so on and so forth, I really think it does need to be changed to reflect current reality, and I don't think it quite is where it needs to be at this time. When I look at the legislation, I see that it's largely based on legislation adopted in the 70s and 80s when the cable TV was a standalone service. But now cable companies, of course, and telephone companies have entered the digital era, and we've gone through some enormous changes. So what was written back then might not necessarily be as relevant to what we have before us today. And I think it really is time to take a serious look at this particular chapter. Both industries, both the telephone and cable, are capable and, in fact, do provide integrated broadband networks offering the triple play of voice, video, and data. So the distinctions have really blurred. That whole issue of convergence is, you know, here for sure. And the present and future is single companies providing all three data communication services. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And I think Chapter 238 clearly needs some work to bring that reality into more focus. So that's kind of the background or the context of what I'm thinking as I move the bill forward. So with that, I would like to just give folks offer a couple of comments. I know Representative Hoppe wanted to say a few words, perhaps, and you're welcome to as the lead. And then I'd like to get right down to business and tackle some of these topics.
Thank you. I don't know if I should call you Mr. Chair, but just be on the safe side. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Never hurts to suck up a little. I think it's a good idea that we're all here, and I think the chair touched on a lot of things that I was going to say. I think looking at this from all the different parties that are represented on a bipartisan basis, I think technologies have changed, and I think the situation has changed from back when most of Chapter 238 was written. I think it's our job to figure out the best way going forward for the people of Minnesota to make this all work. And I don't know if we'll ever achieve Greg David's elusive peace in the valley, but I think if we can get at least a consensus on what's going to be best for all of our constituents and all of your customers, all of the consumers, try to figure out the best way we can do this going forward for the people of the state, hopefully coming up with a solution that reflects current technologies and maybe things that are coming in the near future. That's all I know.
All right, well said. Did anybody else want to make any kind of preface comments before we get down to business? If not, let's get started. I'm going to ask John here to hand out some of the information we have, which can serve as a little bit of a framework or guide for what we're trying to do. The bill, I guess, for example, will be Let's start. Looks like you have some other stuff here, too.
Yeah.
Now, for the purpose of this meeting, it's not a committee meeting, so I'm not expecting you to go through the chair. It doesn't look like we have too wild a bunch here. You're more than welcome to speak to each other and to me, you know, and we want to keep order, obviously, so one person talking at a time. But short of that, I think we can operate in a problem-solving adult fashion. I will let you know I do serve as a disciplinarian at the workhouse, so I am used to instilling discipline as needed. Now, the first thing we're going to look at here is franchise fees. So the table is open for anyone to offer their ideas, suggestions, thoughts, whatever they have with respect to franchise fees they think would be useful as an initial point of discussion or for us to know, to be aware of. Again, we'll take, 15, 20 minutes on each or less, depending on how talkative people are, and just go from there.
Mr. Chairman, would it be helpful if we heard from, Jeff Leaders is represents the administrators. Would it be helpful if he gave us some fundamentals on franchisees or...
It would be helpful to me, probably. Yeah.
Well, I think there's a lot of things to it, and I think just
is that something you're prepared to do, Jeff? To give us a tutorial on franchisees?
I didn't ask him before.
No, that's okay. A number of us and Matt believe that first of all, we're a little bit concerned about the situation we find ourselves in. We want to be very respectful of the process and. But we've lived within the current law as it was created for approximately 30 years, and we don't really see a need for change. But at the same time, we understand that with the onset of new technologies and the different uses of the networks, that at least it served the useful purpose to review it. But at the same time, I guess from our standpoint, if you look across the study, 5% is pretty standard. We would hope that those fees would be paid directly to the cities, same as the incumbent providers. No offsets on any taxes or fees paid by the company. The franchise fees, as far as the city of Lakeville goes, go directly to the government television operations and the funding of staff to produce, the city council and planning commission meetings and all the fire and police shows and things like that serve our community. I know that's not the same in every community, there's a number of communities throughout the state that utilize those franchise fees in different ways and have additional peg fees that they use to operate their three or more channels in their communities for public education and government access. The loss of those franchise fees in some communities would create a significant hole in the general budget that they currently count on. In our case, the loss of the franchise fees would pretty much probably shut down our department. So I don't know if that kind of hits everything, but...
No, I think... No, that's a good answer. I was thinking of the range. Commonly, it's 5%, but there is a range. I mean, not Does every community doesn't do fit?
No, there's...
Perhaps I can speak to that. We have a lot of cities in Minnesota on the Antigone single list that are receiving cable service that have so few customers or subscribers to those services for just video that it does not seem to the city council members necessary to have the cable company collect an additional fee from subscribers because they don't have the means at hand locally to do some of the things that the city of Lakeville is doing. And that's the beauty of what we have now, which is there's some discretion at the local level to look at the needs that community has and decide in the negotiation with the providers whether it is 5% that would be helpful and can collect a sufficient amount of revenue to be meaningful, to be used for something purposeful, whether it's for a department like Jeff is talking about that runs the cable access services and so forth, or it goes into the general budget for the city to be used for whatever reason they think is primarily in their interest to do. So we have 600 cities in Minnesota approximately that have cable service. A lot of them have populations of under 2,500 people.
Representative Johnson?
Mm-hmm.
Just for clarification, the provider fee that you're referring to in this language is what we're talking about when we're talking about franchise fees, correct? In the bill?
Yes.
Okay. And to follow up on Ann's point, franchise fees, it determines, the city gets to determine how the franchise fee can be used. It can either be used as general fund revenue or it can be used to go to an organization like Jeff. There's also other support mechanisms that are in franchises. It really isn't dependent on the size of the city. It's more dependent on their commitment to public access broadcasting if they want to charge an additional capital fee on top of the franchise fee. That's something that's allowed by the FCC to support, you know, equipment purchases. But the franchise fee, I have large cities. The city of Mankato does not charge a full 5% franchise fee. The city of Austin just recently raised their fee. It's more for operating revenue. So it's not something that people across the board, and I still have the majority of my smaller communities that charge no fee or a flat $150, $250 fee per year.
But I would argue nationally that the average is 5%.
I think for the larger communities, there's no doubt that the, you know, but again, it's not something that's equal across the board. You can find a few communities that do not have a 5% franchise fee, as I just said.
Go ahead. Whoever hasn't spoken, go ahead. I think you would join.
Me? Okay, great. It's Frontier's position that the franchise fee originated as the fee paid for the use of the right-of-way. Perfectly logical. We're already in the right of way, but we have no objection to paying a franchise fee, and particularly changing the name to provider fee. Is that what we're calling it? And that's fine. We find that perfectly acceptable. I do think that there is room to satisfy the concerns on the flexibility of the fee amount itself by stating the language in ways that other states have managed to do, which will allow current fees up to 5% to be accommodated in the agreement with any local franchising authority, with the local cities in many of the smaller towns, as Ann refers to, in which many of Randy's members serve. Those fees run from 0 to 2 to 3.5%, and those fees should be allowed to stand because those are local agreements that we feel have validity still, whereas the rest of the state with a 5% cap would be perfectly acceptable to us.
Ellis, do you have something?
Mr. Chairman, I hear the conversation going back and forth about the amount of the fee and whether 3% or 5% or subscription across the state, but to me, it strikes me that there's a more fundamental question in play here, which is whether or not the current system is working and whether or not it needs change. And I think you can look across the state and see, you know, about 50 or so competitive franchises. Those competitive franchises under the current rules in Minnesota, everybody's treated as equal. And if you have a local franchise, you're paying equivalent local franchise fee. It's been determined, it's been worked out, and it's fair and it's equitable. I think that when you start talking about changing that fee to a state provider fee, you start getting into different questions then about taxation, and you're not talking about a local role in that process anymore, then I think you start talking about tax equity across the board and whether or not there is, you know, the fee there is equivalent. if you're talking in a statewide system, when we look at these, we know that whether it's us or a competitive overbuilder in a community that's paying a similar franchise fee, the city has a local role in that process. You go to a state level, and we're looking at competitors like DirecTV or Dish Network, who don't pay anywhere near the equivalent amount of taxes that we pay. So I think that there's a question in play there, which is if you're taking the local governments out of the role of this process and you're making this a statewide fee, then what is the question that you want to look at in terms of how do you get to an equivalent fair system? You can make a clear argument that the current system is that now because everybody's going into a local government and they're making the arrangements under the contract, and it's equivalent within that community. But if you take it out of that and you put it into a state context, you have a vast array from a 6.5% sales tax that a DBS satellite system would pay to what other companies are paying, where they have the franchise fees, the peg fees, other fees, the sales tax fee. They all start being rolled into one, and then suddenly there's equality that might be arguably in place at the local government system no longer exists at that statewide system. I mean, Jeff or Ann, would either of you, does that make sense from your perspective?
Oh, yeah, I totally agree. I mean, the fact that, I mean, I was trying to be politically correct. I mean, you know, we're here at Sheldon's bequest, basically, to take a look at this. But at the same time, I mean, you know, we believe in the system. We've lived under the system, and we think the system can be successful going forward. You know, and when there's change, there's also, you know, the opportunity for things to get screwed up, and I think, you know, that's kind of the situation that a number of states have found themselves in now, where you know, across this great nation, there's been 13 or 14 states that have gone the way of state franchising, and what have we seen? We've not seen a reduction in price. We've not seen a rollout of broadband. We've not seen, you know, we've seen PEG centers that are serving communities get closed down in Indiana and Michigan another state that slips to my mind at the moment. But we saw in North Carolina where 77 franchises were applied for, statewide franchises, and they were all the incumbent providers just asking to get out of their local obligations. So
one thing I don't want to get lost in would be easy to, and I understand where you're coming from, but I don't want to get lost in the testimony of whether statewide franchising is a go or not a go, or, you know, what's the different opinions on how it's worked in other states at this point. I do want to stay focused, though, on the franchise fee issue and what it is to be a workable product from your perspective.
Sure. Well, I mean, if you look at page 5 on here, line 613, you know, we do have a problem with the statement where it says less all costs, fees, and other mandatory payments. I mean, the bottom line is it's a flat 5%. I mean, that's what we're getting now. There's no deductions.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, there's even what they call the franchise fee on franchise fee, and I'd have to turn to Brian Grogan or Steve DeVetter to help me clarify that. But, you know, when a customer pays $20, they pay $1 for a franchise fee, and there's a nickel on there that's the fee on the fee, and that's where it stops. But anyway, that being said, we would just say that part we would not feel comfortable with that. That's tricky.
Perhaps I could make one comment, and Andy, you can correct me, because I was listening by phone. I was out on medical leave when John Stanek and Andy Schreiner came to meet with our telecommunications policy task force a couple weeks ago. And what I noted in my notes was Mr. Stanek's comment that he had no problem with the franchise fee, and that, you know, what the incumbent pays, you know, they felt was reasonable under what they had, at least what he was telling us at that point, that level of conversation. We weren't in a negotiation.
Right.
We were just talking policy. And I was encouraged by that also just to the fact that it is a cost of doing business. Anything that derived from the operation of that cable system, we thought of as part of that 5% number that we're looking at. And it's pretty straightforward at the local level, and folks can have the opportunity there to make choices with the incumbent and then with the competitor to try to be equivalent in some overall picture or in specific respect to franchise fees as we have it now, I don't know. But you know, we think that that reflects really what Minnesota has been up to now with these things. And truthfully, even with convergence, the importance of a community aspect to this is, I think, continues to be very relevant and valid. So, yeah.
Mr. Chairman, Andy Schreiner from Quest. I think Ann stated John's comments to the league members accurately. I mean, we all along contemplated whatever the cable provider paid, whatever the incumbent was paying, the telephone company would pay. We didn't contemplate as part of this paying the state the fees that we collect to the state and having the state remit it to the local government. That was never part of our thought process as we went through this. I don't know of any states that have done that, but we would contemplate paying directly to the local provider. I think the legislation here calls for 45 days after the close of the quarter. We don't want to get too complex in this, and it's a very simple process.
No, go ahead.
I'd like to concur with what Ann and Andy have both said. The intent, I think, for the competitor coming in to match the obligation of the incumbent is pretty much an area of agreement from the get-go. We will perhaps have areas of disagreement when we start defining what gross revenues are, and that may take some more discussion. And we definitely do not want to see the franchise fee or provider fee turned into a tax situation. We have absolutely no desire to go there.
But Joanne, you earlier said that you feel that the franchise fee is a right-of-way fee. So it's a little contrary to what you said before, that because you're already in the right-of-way, you don't... what are you stating about the fee? You're already in the right-of-way. You feel the franchise fee is a fee. This is, as Emmett pointed out, it's a state-authorized fee under this current language. So the state is giving the authorization and saying that it needs to be equal under a different definition of what gross revenues or franchise fees are versus what the local franchise is. But you also stated something that you could use to dispute any reason to pay that fee at all to the local government because you're already situated within the right of way.
I don't know what's disputable when I say when we're in agreement with paying a franchise fee and we would oppose it turning into a state-level tax. I don't see where I've been contradictory there. My initial statement regarding the right-of-way origin for the franchise fee was just by matter of history.
Well, I'd be interested in hearing people who haven't spoken yet.
Looking at that language on 613, in terms of the less all costs, fees, required to pay by the municipality. I think there's a general concern that PEG providers have about in-kind services that cable companies provide for municipalities as well as for nonprofits. Those typically aren't monetized. So that conceivably could be cutting into the franchise fee that goes to the local municipality if it were monetized. You're defining it as cost. I think that's a landmine. I think as well, you could conceivably be looking at any PEG fee that Tucker referred to, or any other agreement that occurs between a provider and a municipality as going against the 5% with that language. So I think that's a concern as well, that I think is a landmine or trouble spot that would really be a detriment to provision of services for municipalities, nonprofits, and civic groups across the state.
Okay, Randy? From the perspective of the small companies, maybe a little bit of history. Historically, the federal government has precluded telephone companies from providing cable service in their telephone service area. Communities under 2,500 were exempt from that argument, being you're probably not going to get anyone to come in. I would guess that more of my members that are providing video service are doing it as a cable company because in a community it's under 2,500 than as a telephone company that's coming in to compete. We do have a number of them that are now doing it as part of their telephone offering. So we kind of have both. I think the thing, and I agree with Ann, that we're interested in the franchise area, and we have no problem again, paying that franchise fee as the other folks in the telephone industry have, is that the local unit of government do have the flexibility to set that fee under 5% if they want to. A lot of our communities are willing, and townships are willing, to waive the fee completely just to get somebody to come in and provide cable service, because they have a few hundred customers and it's tough to get anyone to come in. So I think that flexibility at the local level would be good to continue.
Mr. Chairman, I believe, and maybe Jennifer Ann knows the answer to this, some states limit the purpose of those franchise fees as well strictly to PEG programming, and we're not contemplating that in here. And we don't prohibit, okay. We haven't contemplated prohibiting it.
There's only one state in the country that does that, and that's okay. Massachusetts.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's not some state, it's one state.
Okay. Wasn't aware of the number, but thanks for that.
Yeah. Well, it is a number, actually.
The point about franchise fees is, you know, there's the percentage of the fee, but then as has already been stated by others, there's the gross revenues that you're paying the fee on. And so that's, you know, that's a key point. And then I think one of the concerns that I would have from our side is, where's the equity? Because you're tying this to what the current provider is paying within the system, but you're also giving exceptions for a statewide franchise provider that aren't extended to the current provider within the system. So there's not equity in the payment. Because you're not, you know, I mean, if there's going to be a statewide definition under this bill for a provider fee, there's going to be exceptions to allow the provider fee to deduct cost fees and any other mandatory payments. And then there's also going to be a state gross revenue definition. My interpretation is that this isn't going to extend to the current provider who is already franchised within that local unit of government, because they are not authorized to get the state authorization. So it's a two-track regulatory system, two-track. I've got a gross revenues definition which exists within the franchise, and a franchise fee definition on when I'm going to pay, the amount that I'm going to pay, all of those different factors. So there's an equality issue.
Sure. Well, just keep in mind, you know, the whole idea here isn't to win an argument with me over what is what or what is best or that whatever thing. I'm not really interested in that. I'm not familiar with the nuances to the extent that you are, obviously. What I'm interested in is you folks talking to each other about what the possible solutions can be to this bill as it goes forward on this specific topic of franchise fees. So I'm looking for solutions and answers that will be helpful for you folks to come up with a product that's going to work. Mark?
I think I've heard both existing franchise holders and prospective franchise holders say they think it would be fair for all future franchise holders to pay the same fees in the same geographic area. So I think I've heard consensus on that point. But there has been some discussion that under the current statute, individual cities or communities can set the fee based on what's good for that particular community. As I understand it, part of the thrust of a potential statewide bill would be to have sort of a standard franchise fee that would ease the entry of new franchise holders, because they would be facing a standard fee in all new areas that they want to go into. But if a law like that would pass, that would mean that some of the existing flexibility for individual communities would be lost. So there's a policy trade-off there. How much flexibility do you want to provide to the local communities versus how much standardization do you want to provide for all future applicants or all future changes in the franchises?
All right. Thank you for that. Help clarify for me. Well, we're kind of running out of time on this particular topic. Diane, did you want to chime in on anything in particular come to mind as you're listening?
No, Representative Johnson. You know, we don't have a position on this bill, so if we have information we can share, I'll do that, but it's not an area that we've regulated or had oversight over before.
Very good. I think that was a good summary comment by Mark there. So unless somebody has something that hasn't been said, let's move on to the second item we have before us, municipal services, INET. And again, what we want to hear is what's important to you, what needs to be in the bill, what's going to work, what's the way to get around whatever issues that are problematic that we can resolve them, or what are some of the options that we can pursue. So with that, if somebody wants to just explain a little bit what municipal services and INET is, so we're all on the same page, I think that would be helpful. Does anybody feel comfortable in doing that? Mm-hmm. Ann, is that something new?
I can give it a try, and I'm sure Jeff will make a backstop, and there are some of the folks that are here as well. My familiarity is really about third hand, because the league doesn't negotiate these, and the point being that, again, just like the franchise fee percentage that is set in the franchise agreement, sometimes these INETs are part of a franchise agreement, and sometimes they're not. Number two, they're built under a variety of agreements, even in the franchise. In some cases, there's a payment up front by the folks that are going to get the benefit to help build it. In other cases, it is an obligation that the franchisee agrees to, and they incur all the costs, and it may be free use for the public good. So it may be, and it can be very widely used for just an enormous amount of very important services, not just in probably one community. This is my experience, is that this happens more often, although not entirely, because St. Paul can certainly beat me up on this because they do so much with theirs, but from public safety, school, finance, sharing of data to educational programs between the schools and to library connections to the internet, a variety of things, even to hooking up different facilities that the city has, or the fire and the police station, for them to use for public safety purposes. And the cost savings to taxpayers of that over the years is what's important to the league. Because quite frankly, the ability to have had those in place, and they're not in place in lots of parts of the state. I mean, it's a local option, it's a negotiation. In many cases, I would guess, and Emmett and others could speak to this more directly, I know. It's part of a conversation that happens if the cable company or the new entrant is going to agree to something of this kind. It wouldn't be just out of the goodness of their hearts. They're looking for some arrangement in that franchise that kind of is, you know, an accommodation that they can see the benefit of and say, well, yeah, and this also is good for us because now the school kids will see that Comcast or whomever is doing these things in their local classroom or whatever, and you know, those are our future customers, and they're going to go home to their moms and dads and all that kind of thing. All of those pieces, I suspect, enter in. So the point, I think, has been an enormously forward-looking part of franchising in Minnesota. I think we have more. What I've heard from my constituents, the league and the MACA, is that Minnesota does more of this than many other states. I don't mean Minnesota. Minnesota communities and Minnesota jurisdictional or multi-jurisdictional commissions. Sometimes we've got like the 10 cities that you just heard Ms. Wilson mention, is she's the executive director for that commission. 10 cities north of St. Paul have done this for some time and have made enormous use of it. It's extremely important to us.
I'd play off of what Ann is saying too, Mr. Chairman, which is part of the reason that works is because of the current rules in Minnesota allow for local communities to make a determination about what the value of their rights of way are in exchange for allowing a company to come in. It's a community standard. It's one where businesses work cooperatively with the community to determine what the balance is between business interests and community value in exchange for that right of way. And in some communities, it includes public access, it includes institutional networks, it includes franchise fees, some is 3%, some is 5%. But a local community need and a local community value on the right-of-way is determined in conjunction with business in terms of what makes sense. And the only companies that have been interested in having these franchise arrangements have found a way to make that balance and make that balance work. And it's worked well for municipal things, interests such as your own community in St. Paul, and in other communities it's a different standard. But the current system has allowed that to work based on local community interests. And it has worked well. It's part of why Minnesota does have a thriving public access. It does have communities like St. Paul that have a very vibrant institutional network. And I'm still perplexed as to kind of why we're looking to compromise on something when the companies that have been willing to do this have been engaged in this and have found a way to balance them.
Representative Johnson, if I can just add into Emmett's comments briefly. I mean, what Ann was talking about free service, there's some cable attorneys here, me, Mr. Grogan, and others that could add into this very much clearer than I can, but there's a two-track system right now that exists for cable franchise. There's the informal and the formal process. And if the city is demanding something that is too great, the company has the option to seek a formal proceeding, which is effectively a binding arbitration. Again, I'm not the lawyer, so I may be a little incorrect on that. But, you know, there is this process. So if the free service requirements don't meet the mutual benefits of the company and the city, if the city is demanding more in public access programming or support or other, you know, the definitions that are above and beyond something that the company is willing to accept, then there is another option for the company or for the city to take this separate path. There is a procedure in place right now under the federal law to allow for some type of conflict resolution, and again, that's why you don't see a lot of formal proceedings. You know, again, that's why there are other phone companies within the state of Minnesota that have been able to obtain franchises from local units of government because they've gone through the proceedings and they haven't put unrealistic or unfair demands on the city. And the cities have granted franchises, and in many cases, that was evidence in the paper last week in the Rosemont situation, they bent over backwards to try to give competitive franchises, and the company still hasn't met the obligations that they agreed to from the franchise.
What are you guys, telephone folks?
Yeah, we're not, Andy, Mr. Chairman, we're on tape, correct? So we should identify ourselves every time we speak.
Yeah.
Andy Schreiner from Quest. I think the bottom line for us is that, you know, we're willing to pay fees for INET. We just believe that they should be based on something like the number of subscriptions that we have as opposed to a flat fee for INET services.
Can you say that again, Andy? Just I'm hearing you.
Subscription-based.
So
similar to PEG.
So just to think out loud here for a moment, let's say we're in a city like St. Paul, where there's an INET already,
right?
How would that work? As you roll out services, which I know you're, you know, let's say there's a certain amount of penetration in my city. How exactly does it work then? I'm just kind of thinking through the process of how we can mechanically make that happen.
I don't know how mechanically we'd make that happen, and I'd probably have to defer to someone else in my company to get into that level of detail.
Okay,
but. You know, my thought, and just kind of off the top of my head here, is if we have 8% of the market and they have 92%, then if there are costs associated with maintaining the INET, it should be based on our market share as opposed to a flat fee, similar to what the incumbent's paying.
But there's historical costs in the INET as well that I think should be addressed.
And I mean, there's a larger question of disparity here, which is if the video...
I think Annie raised a good point for me to identify itself.
I'm sorry. No, that is a good... You're right, Mr. Chairman. Emmett Coleman with Comcast. I think there's a larger disparity question here, which is if the primary video partner for a company is a company that's regulated differently and is paying a different set of fees, then, you know, how do you define at what point they're getting... Market penetration to 8%, are we going to include the direct satellite companies in this? Because that is the primary competitor across the board for most companies, and they have a very large share of the market in the state of Minnesota. And yet again, they're not subject to these additional fees. They're not subject to the franchise fees. They don't have any institutional network requirements. They're not contributing back to these communities, and the communities have no ability to regulate them. So if you're going to take this out of the local hands, then don't you have to create some parity at the state level where you're then putting the actual services on par with each other from a customer service perspective of what customers are paying in taxes on these various services based on what they would pay in taxes on a similar service in a competitive marketplace? And that's it's a much larger question than that. And the reality is that, you know, with all due respect to Andy, Quest has declared last week in a call with Wall Street that they have no intention of pursuing video and that they will keep a DirecTV, our primary competitor, as their partner on video going forward for the foreseeable future. So I just kind of wonder, I mean, how do we achieve parity in that environment? And if somebody from the cities or somebody else can suggest how we do that, I would love to know what that is.
Well, Representative Johnson, I mean, from this bill, I don't think parity is. You're trying to encourage these companies and entice them into competing. So that's why this bill wouldn't affect current providers. Because I mean, as it explicitly states, people under 238.02.29A are not state authorized media providers. Meaning the current cable company wouldn't be a state authorized video provider. Correct. Okay. So there isn't any desire to achieve parity. It's to achieve encouragement to bring Quest and Frontier and Randy's people into the marketplace. Is that a fair characterization, Doug?
Well, I'd say a fair characterization is that I'm a strong supporter of initial services iNet, and I want to see that included as an important part of this bill, and I'd like to see it written in a way that assures that communities have that as part of their operation.
But if that lack of parity were to drive one or the other of the competitors out of the marketplace, and one of the people coming into the marketplace didn't have the same requirements for municipal services or iNet, then that may actually jeopardize the iNet, the support mechanisms if they're not equal. I mean, that's the problem that really exists in any of these topics that we discuss in this, is that there's always the risk that one or another is going to leave the marketplace because there isn't an effective marketplace there. And in some of those instances, it may be those that have been harmed by the lack of parity.
Yes, because I don't understand how it fully works on the cable side. When you have your informal discussions with the city, is there a discussion about, well, if we provide the iNet, then we'll charge a cable fee of $50. If we don't provide the iNet, then our cable fee would be $45. My assumption is the iNet has to be paid for somehow, and that would be in your end-user cable fees.
The iNet, you know, and again, it depends. There's municipal services, which are services to the fire station, the police station, city hall, which is just a video service or video and a data service. An iNet is a separate network that runs on the backbone of the cable system that allows for internal communication. A lot of iNets have become obsolete because of the current internet technology. So I know that the city of Minneapolis and St. Paul have iNets, but I think that they're going far above and beyond what was originally intentioned by the FCC when they left the provision for iNets to begin with. So the larger issue for the vast majority of my franchises is going to be municipal services that are provided. Am I providing services to all of these areas? Is there going to be parity within the provision of those services? Are there additional services that have been agreed to that go above and beyond video services as well?
A couple of other questions. If there is infrastructure in place, then who owns it, the city or the cable company? And then if, just speaking from the telecommunications side, if you want competition, then we don't allow companies to sell a service below the cost or you'll never have competition. The service has to be priced at or above cost because
I'm talking in telecommunications,
but if you want competition in broadband or cable, I would assume the same principle would apply. You'd have to price it above cost. A competitor can't come in if someone is selling a service below cost.
Well, Diane, I think that's actually why when you've seen these instances of other changes in other states, you've not seen prices fall. There is no demonstrable
case where additional competition is coming and drop prices dramatically because prices have to reflect costs. You're absolutely right. So they do have to reflect costs.
Well, what I've read on cable is competition does lower, that there are instances where prices lower. Prices are lower with competition.
I have a single example of that because I have yet to see one. Every case where I have seen it, you can find very specific details that are specific to that community that suggest that that's absolutely not the case.
And I you know, I'm going to argue about it, and you know, everybody can read what they want to read. And I understand cable pricing is different because you have cost of the programming, and that's a big factor in cable costs.
But then I guess your point is the services, if we're providing free pseudo telecommunications services over the iNet as part of the franchise agreement.
No, my point is if you're interested in developing a competitive marketplace, you have to be very careful about how you do the pricing of all of the services that the providers offer. Or
well,
you won't get competition for
it. Well, okay, again, you know, let me just state for the record, there is competition in the marketplace. I have to open up my Sunday paper every day and see ads from Frontier and Quest, and on my TV every day and see ads from Frontier and Quest. So let's stop this assessment that there isn't competition. There's competition in the telephone marketplace because of cable. There's competition in the data marketplace because of DSL cable, Wi-Fi, whatever it is. And there's competition in the video marketplace because of overbuilders and satellite providers as well as cable. So the competition does exist. As it pertains to iNet, there isn't a lack of providing a competitive service. What we're doing is we're providing an additional service, an enhanced service, and a lot of these iNets were built when the network was either being originally constructed or upgraded to provide this interconnection within these city facilities. And in some instances, for instance, in Jefftown of Lakeville, we created an additional contract which was tied to the franchise. And it was creating that fiber backbone that the city does pay a rate for, which is a specially agreed upon rate for those telecommunications services, at above or below cost, I don't know. But again, the biggest cost there, of course, is the construction. And when you're initially building these networks or upgrading these networks, that's the time you want to be having these discussions because that's the time you're opening up the right-of-way and inserting more facilities in those right-of-way. So when you're inserting those additional facilities, there could be, you know, that additional network you're building for the city as part of that agreement.
I want to hear a few more comments from people who haven't spoken yet on iNet perspective.
I guess one of the hard things you're going to have to find any type of valid ground on this issue, it seems to me, is that in some cases, again, an iNet is a non-monetized service that's provided by a provider in some instances to a city. So there isn't necessarily a monetary value that's been placed in terms of negotiations. I know in the case of St. Paul, St. Paul doesn't receive a bill, and the iNet is specifically, you know, operated by the cable company. The municipal services run on top of it. Okay, so how exactly you monetize that is unclear. And again, sort of one note samba here, 613 would imply that the monetized cost would be of that, if it were to be derived, would be charged against a 5% franchise fee. So in that instance, you'd be harming the municipality, harming their bottom line by having, and that's actually what we've seen in a number of other states where this issue has come up, of iNet costs being charged back against the franchise fee. So but the value we have is to try to have these enhanced municipal services. You probably have to change the language to ensure that municipalities are not on the hook or suffer as a result of those types of negotiations and support. Because I think most of the corporations that are involved will want to be able to support enhanced municipal services for better education, better fire and safety, the goals that they support. But I think that language will be an impediment or a harm to municipalities.
Got it. Randy, are you?
It seems to me that this isn't really a big philosophical issue. This is more of an issue that has two elements. One is you got an iNet that's of value to the cities, and you want to make sure that that's not degraded. And two, what's the most equitable way of figuring out how do you either compensate the original provider of that iNet for new providers coming in, and then two, how do you pay for the ongoing cost in an equitable way? doesn't seem to me that that is that difficult a thing to try to figure out. How do you slice up the baby here so that it's fair to everybody?
But the point is that it's being done all the time. I mean, it's being done now where your members have second franchises. Those details get worked out under the control of the city. Is that right?
Right, and in some cases, there's some of the folks who are here could speak to more concretely. The cities are paying for lighting the Firebird. In other words, some of this operational cost is not literally running the INET. The INET has been laid and the capacity is there, but to turn it on and to use services. So unlike St. Paul, maybe, where maybe the cable company does actually operate the thing, in other cases it doesn't. It puts fiber in, and now in order to use the services, the city has to come up with the dollars of the school districts or whatever. So there's such a variety of arrangements that are there. That's why what you just said, Randy, makes most sense to me. Is that
but to Mike's point, in those areas where there has been this, you know, not easily quantifiable investment, capital investment that was made by one company, the other company has agreed to do something that is equal, or even in certain instances greater, but under their own, you know, the company has agreed to doing that to compensate and remain within the level playing field and keeping the parity within that system. But it's always been mutually agreed upon in the contract.
Joanne, I was going to say something. Identify yourself too before you guys, before you speak to someone.
Joanne Johnson, Frontier Communications. Echoing what Ann and Randy have said, we are not anti-parity here. And we are not anti-INET. In fact, we see great value in the INET system as it's evolved, and great pride in the state of Minnesota in how we've been able to leverage that asset into community services. And the parity that we are speaking of is that we know there are ongoing costs, particularly for those incumbents who are carrying the bulk of the expense and not charging the city. If, in fact, the city is paying for services, then the city is the incumbent's customer. That transaction has nothing to do with the competitor. But where the incumbent is providing services, the competitor should be required to carry a proportionate share of that ongoing cost. And we have no objection to that. That's why when Andy spoke of the pro rata per subscriber, you take that amount, you divide it by the total number of subscribers for the year, and however many I have, that's my share. And I think that that is a very equitable solution. And I think that it can all be worked out to the benefit of the cities, and it should not degenerate into a, yeah, but we don't like satellites. That's just got nothing to do with this particular discussion.
Right. How about Mark or anybody else? Can you finish that? Mark, give me a minute.
Yeah, just a brief comment. It's my understanding that these INET services are facilities-based, and they were often worked out for the first time when the first franchise operator came to town. And so we're talking about facilities in the right-of-way. The satellite operators, they don't have facilities in the right-of-way as far as I know. And from my limited point of view, I don't think it's necessary to bring satellite companies into this discussion. On the telephone side, you've got facilities carriers providing telephone service. You've got cellular carriers providing telephone service. The cellular and the facilities companies, they are under separate and different degrees of regulation. So setting satellite aside would not be without some precedent.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if I can, this is Emmett Coleman with Comcast, and I mean, there's a couple of things about it. One, I would first state that to have this conversation and ignore the major competitor of video services in the state of Minnesota, I think is a fundamental mistake in terms of how this ultimately affects consumers in the state of Minnesota, and I hope to some degree that we can keep them in part of this, because our primary competitor partners with satellite companies.
And if you talk about the deployment of services in the state and how you help and hope that this will help facilitate that, I don't think we can ignore how one company manages to do that in terms of providing triple play to the customer, and that is through satellite, which, again, doesn't give back to these communities. The other part of that is, just kind of as a stepping back a little bit, is the suggestion has been made by a number of people that the current 238 needs to be changed because it's kind of an older era technology has changed. We need to look at it and change it to reflect new technology. But I think one of the great ironies in there is that 238, because it is balanced, because it is fair, it is equitable in the way it treats everybody, has actually been what has facilitated the deployment of advanced services in Minnesota to date. It has allowed the investment in fiber. It has allowed the deployment of broadband. It has allowed a competitive land-based phone product overbuilder. The current rules have treated everybody fairly, and as a result have encouraged investment, encouraged innovation, and I think that there's some irony in there. But to Mark's point, I guess I would ask a question, which is, how do phone companies that are currently in the right-of-way pay for the value of that right-of-way in the state of Minnesota? I don't honestly know, but it has been my understanding that there, it's not paid to the local cities. And whether it's a federal preemption or it's a state preemption, I don't know. Can you speak to that at all, or could one of the phone providers in the room talk to how they provide value back in exchange for right-of-way access?
I'm not aware of the Public Utilities Commission being involved in any of those kind of payments. There may be fees or taxes the telephone companies pay. But by being in the right-of-way, there is a certain amount of oversight regarding the quality and adequacy of the service that they do provide using the public right-of-ways.
If I can just add 2 points. When a city is, a municipality is negotiating a franchise agreement, usually what happens first is there's a community needs assessment, and from that assessment is created a list of items, you know, that we feel the cable provider or whoever we're negotiating with can help us, you know, achieve some kind of outcome. So those are negotiated, the INETs are negotiated. Now, how they're paid for, there's a myriad of ways that they're paid for. Some of them are in kind. Some of them are pay the construction fee, pay the last mile fee, pay the monthly fee. You know, but one thing that we can't lose in this whole process, and I would defer to Dave Astis, you know, the innovation that has come from the use of INETs in our state is by far one of the greatest things that has happened in our state. If you look at what the counties are doing now with the fiber rings, what rural communities like Upsala, Minnesota, ties through Little Falls, ties to the University of St. Cloud, you know, or St. Cloud State University, out in Hutchinson, you know, Pete Royer and his group have tied together a number of small communities, and they're grabbing a Chinese teacher from Edina to teach language to, you know, to their communities. I mean, there's just a myriad of things that have happened because these INETs have allowed for increased access, not only in one community in some cases, but in multiple communities and then across the state. So I just leave that with you.
Yeah, well, I think we're all in agreement that we want to keep INET, and that's kind of the idea of the bill is to figure out how we do that. Anybody make any comments they haven't made yet? Andy, do you have anything? Well, time is winding down here. I want to move on to the third item here to get people's perspectives on the board here. Definition of growth revenues. Can anybody put some context on that?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Andy Schreiner from Quest. Just to talk directly about the legislation, our intent here
was, you know, we looked at a number of different states and different models for a definition of gross revenue. What we tried to do was adopt a definition that was in an existing local franchise agreement. We thought that was the way to minimize concern from local governments about the definition. And so if folks have a different approach to take, or if someone says, well, this isn't mine, I'd like mine, we're certainly open to having that discussion about what the definition might be.
Mr. Chairman, just for the record, and not to be...
just make sure
I'm sorry, Tucker Carlson with Charter Communications. Just for the record, I mean, Andy stated a couple of times that, you know, his intent with this bill. So this is language that was provided to you by Quest, correct? So this has not been amended by any of the other cable or municipalities?
Pardon?
Andy keeps referring to this as his intent with the bill, his intent with the provider fee, his intent with the gross revenues definition. So this was language that was provided to you for this legislation by Quest or by the other phone companies, or was there? I don't know the history of where this bill came from, so I'm just trying to get that clarified for the record.
Well, you can talk to Andy about that, but...
Okay.
What was your question?
This is your bill.
Right.
Correct. But I'm just trying to clarify that this was language that was provided by Quest without any additional input from the cable companies or from the municipalities. Or was there additional input from other interested parties besides the telephone companies for this legislation?
That's the point of the meeting, sir, is to begin this working group process of dealing with the bill.
Okay.
Yeah. One thing that I might add is I know that in previous meetings, John has indicated that he is very happy with the St. Paul definition of gross revenue.
Yes.
And we do have a copy of that here as part of the... Mike Reardon has supplied that to us, so I don't know how that compares with what's in the current bill, but I guess it would be nice to at least reflect upon that to see how they match up.
Mr. Chair, can St. Paul language be distributed then for...
That would be helpful.
Make copies.
And if in fact it matches the language in the current working bill, then we can work off that too.
Yeah, I'm sorry I didn't get to review it. I could have told you that.
There are some points in the language at the federal level that I think would be well for us to pay some attention to that I don't see in this legislation for the definition of gross revenues, because I would think that the phrase that is there in federal law would be significant and has been there and has worked. And it's called any revenues derived in any way from the operation of the cable system that's being franchised. So it's not just collected. Derived from the operation is where we would like to have the conversation.
I think the term collected was Andy Schreiner from Quest. I think the term collected was meant to take into account if you don't collect it, someone doesn't pay their bill. You don't have to include that as part of your gross revenue. I think that's why we chose the word collected or whatever is that.
I guess just Mike Wassenaar, for those of us who are literalists here, what would be the differentiation between your the derived and collected? What would be the real effect of one piece of language over another? Just so people can, I mean, so there's not just a semantic batting backwards and forwards here.
Joanne Johnson from Frontier. From going through negotiations in other states on this issue, basically what it comes down to from our side of the table is that gross revenues that are collected are things that the subscriber pays for. It's services, it's pay-per-view, it's the rental of the equipment, et cetera, and so on. Derived from would include all income, including home shopping network commissions and advertising and that. So there's where the division lies.
Well, if I can just refer to 617 in the bill, the federal language is actually reflected in the bill, and it's derived is actually in the bill. So to get to Ann's direct point, the bill language has that language in it. Okay, so.
I didn't
so,
say I agreed with the existing language. Either.
Right, just so we understand what's on paper as opposed to what's in our minds.
Yes.
So, thank you.
And Mr. Chairman, for clarification, I mean, this is there's what we refer to as non-subscriber revenue. So Home Shopping Network, the money that's collected for purchases made on Home Shopping Network, commissions that are paid for those, the fee on the franchise fee that is paid, so fees that can't be attributed directly to the consumer but are attributed for the provision of providing video service, that's the issue that Ann is referring to. So that we're paying fees on stuff outside of just the $50 charge on the customer's bill for getting cable service or the purchase of a video on demand service.
Well, folks, looking at the definition we had before, who passed on this issue, Mike?
Yeah, Mike Reardon from St. Paul handed it to me, and Quest President John Senek has spoken at our MACTA conference and then again at the League of Minnesota Cities Telecom Task Force, and in both cases indicated that that this was an acceptable definition in his mind. So.
This is Ann Higgins again from the League. The other aspect of gross revenues is the authority at the local level, the local franchise authority, to audit this information and to have authority to assess penalties for failure to comply with this payment. There have been many kinds of ways of the cable incumbents as well as competitors looking for ways to limit that authority. Mm-hmm. We would like to suggest that is not where we want to go. We think that you have to have some ability to go back in time if you discover something in the present and you wonder, well, wait a minute, maybe I need to look back and find out where this all started from or what was going on when I wasn't looking before.
Are you proposing individual cities would have that right, Ann?
They do now.
Well, they do now. That's correct. Under current law, this is not...
I don't see any reason why they wouldn't have it. I'm not necessarily agreeing with the state approach.
There is a stated role for cities in the current process, and under this rule, there wouldn't be a role for cities. So you're suggesting cities would still continue to have some regulatory authority in an environment where they actually didn't have other authority. So it sounds, are you making a case for the current rules and the ability of local government? Or are you not making, are you making the case that local government should have that right, even under a state law?
But this is Jeff Leaders. Let's just say currently cities have the right, and we make use of that right, and we appreciate the ability to hold the franchisees accountable for what they're paying us to make sure that we're getting the right amount, and should there be any discrepancies, that the law affords us the opportunity to review their books and to make it happen. I understand the situation that we're in here where we're reflecting on potentially a state law and that would remove the authority from us, which we don't want to give up. If they're giving us a check, even if it's just giving us a check for a 5% franchise fee, we want the ability to audit to make sure that check's right. So that, I guess,
that's... This coming being passed through the state, are you auditing the state? Would you be auditing the companies individually? I mean, it seems to me that you're suggesting that you maintain a right in an environment where you have no other legal control over the companies anymore.
Right.
John, you had a question?
Joanne Johnson from Frontier. I have a suggestion, and that is that Frontier could support language that we negotiated in Iowa regarding municipal audits. Is pretty short, it's pretty succinct, and I believe it has parity for everyone. And so if we could, send that out by email, that may alleviate your concerns, and it would be something we could agree to that would allow an audit no more than once a year.
Maybe we could share with you. I'm not sure we could agree to exactly what you're talking about, and more importantly, this is part of what we would want to see the bill move toward, which would be a retention of local franchising authority. There may be some
other aspects of this bill that at a state level would be appropriate, but we are not agreeing that this would be a vehicle that we would retain authority to audit while the state is granting franchise.
Right.
We don't agree that the state necessarily has that appropriate.
Can I ask one more question, Mr. Chairman? I'll just question, see if they're tracking what they're saying over here. Are you following Ann's point?
Yes.
And what's your comment to it? Anything particular?
No, I mean, we've come to resolution with in other areas on this issue, and I can't foresee a problem working out something in the area of audits.
Mr. Chairman, Emmett Coleman with Comcast. I guess I have another question here, which is, again, I'm trying to figure out how, if you move forward in this process, how it remains fair. I mean, gross revenues and how they are collected and paid, to my knowledge, and somebody else can correct me if I'm wrong, are passed through largely to the customers, if not 100% of the customers. So, to me, the question becomes, how do we, not so much that we have to have it be one way or the other, since the customers are ultimately paying this in the state of Minnesota, but how do we determine that there's a process in place that's going to ensure that one customer living next door to somebody else who's got a different service is paying the same set of fees? And to me, if you set up a standard where you have a state definition and you have local definitions in some communities that differ, you set up disparity again in the tax system. I mean, that ultimately there's a lot of this that gets passed through to customers, and no matter what the change should be level and fair and apply to all, it would strike me. And if somebody at the table can speak to that, I'm confused how this achieves that.
Well, one thing I've mentioned, many of the state laws that I've looked at retain the ability at the local level to specify the fee, but say that fee has to be equal in that local unit of government for all providers.
So we wouldn't have a state definition of gross revenue?
Many of the state, well, no, it doesn't. That sets the percentage of the gross revenue. It makes it as the percentage is the same.
But if you apply to a different set of revenue, you ultimately have an effect.
Oh, I think there has to be there would have to be a state one single definition of gross revenues. Yes.
So essentially, again, then we would set a state standard across the board for all that would apply to all.
As far as the definition, yes, but the percentage of the fee would be decided locally, but it would have to be applied locally to all providers providing local service.
But again, to the earlier point that I made around in Tucker Carlson with Charter Communications, this legislation as currently drafted doesn't apply to us. So we would be bound by the local franchise and the gross revenue definition and franchise fee. Now, I can understand where you can make the parity in the fee, but the point is if to Ann's issue of revenue derived versus revenue collected, that's a big issue, and it can be a lot of revenue there that you're talking about, which would create, you know, a disparity. So the city would lose revenue every customer that went to the newly authorized competitor within the community versus the revenue they'd be collecting from the current provider. So that's where the disparity exists, because if there's two gross revenue definitions, so how does the gross revenue definition supersede the definition that currently exists under the agreement if we're not eliminating the terms of that current agreement? And, you know, is there really a legal way that we can have certain portions apply and certain portions not apply to one provider, and the other provider completely rides on a totally separate track of regulation? So
I think you're bringing up a larger question of how incumbent franchises are treated vis-a-vis state franchises that we'll be taking up later, and that's certainly a big part of it.
Yeah.
All right. Who hasn't commented on this that wants to? Well, we've pretty much gone through the three issues, which brings us to number five, which is adjournment. And I think that's where we're going to head. Again, my intent, folks, is that we get some common ground, some language, or some ideas sent to John here by December 6th. I'm not sure who's going to participate in that. My expectation is that all will. Whatever we get is what we get and what we'll use. So my expectation is that we'll have the opportunity to talk to each other. Go ahead.
And Mr. Chair, how do you envision working with those suggestions? I can imagine you have maybe some strong consensus on some suggestions and just stuff all over the map coming in. What's your vision here?
Well, my vision is we'll look at those as recommendations, and depending how good they are, use them. If they're not, don't. So it really depends. I mean, we'll share them and talk about them, and the fellow legislators and I will certainly take a look at them. And, you know, I can't promise you anything one way or the other. What we're looking for, obviously, is that which will be you folks can live with, and that will be a vehicle for moving forward. So whatever that entails is what we're looking for.
Now, Jeff Leaders, if we come to the end of our three meetings here and it looks like either there needs to be further study or there needs to be a delay in the rollout of a bill, or, you know, I mean, at least from our perspective, based on the 2 years that statewide franchising, as Rondella Hawkins stated from Texas when she was at the MACTA conference, you know, she had data from that 2 years, and, you know, reflecting upon that data, there wasn't a lot of change. Now, maybe 2 years is too short, you know, granted. What is the right amount of time? How can we get data from these 13 other states to adequately reflect on to help us understand if this is the right time for the state of Minnesota to jump in, or should we wait, you know, and do further research to come up with a plan for a rollout of a bill in 2010? Or, you know, I don't know. I'm just throwing it out because at the current time, you know, I there's a lot of people that are really nervous about throwing the baby out with the bathwater because, you know, things have worked well for a lot of years, and that can be categorized by some as barriers to entry. But the bottom line is, when the cable companies got into the business, they spent a lot of money to put their infrastructure in place, and they wanted to make sure that the next person that came along to compete with them had to do the same thing. And to me, that's fair. That's fair. And we look at that in our community and say, well, you know, we want another competitor to come in. We had a competitor on the doorstep in 2001, 2000. Wide Open West was right there ready to sign a franchise. And what happened? The tech stocks fell, the venture capital dried up, and they went back to St. Louis, never to be seen again. Okay? But they were there. And Hickory Tech has been there too, sniffing around, you know, thinking about the same thing. So my only thought is that I just hope that we don't get into the running mode when, just because, you know, some other states are jumping off the bridge.
Just to comment to that, you know, I don't think we need to throw the baby out with the bathwater, but I think you need to be at the table to come up with some honest solutions, and not just, hide out or play attorney litigation games or things like that.
Sure.
But come up with some real honest solutions to reach some kind of reasonable compromise to move this whole idea forward, because this is where we're going.
Mr. Chairman, not to prolong the meeting, but if I could ask a question of either Joanne or Andy. This is Emmett Coleman at Comcast, but I'm just thinking about the meeting today and what we've talked about on franchise fees and on municipal services, on gross revenues definitions. There's debate about it, but there hasn't been, to my mind, any argument made by any of the telephone companies currently in the process that they're opposed to doing that now, or that they've had any problem with the way it's being done now, and if they get to do it at the state level, that wouldn't be a problem either. I mean, that's kind of what I've heard, but to me that suggests that there's not a solution there. It's just taking what they've already doing at the local level, and they're okay with making it happen at the state level too. Did I hear something? Is that accurate? Or did they say that they had a problem with the way it was currently being done and they wouldn't want to see it that way at the state?
Well, again, I'm not interested in getting, if you guys want to sit around and talk about that afterwards, I guess that's on you, but the issues before us right now that I want to talk about and that we've now completed with respect to this meeting, are the three items that you have on your agenda sheet. That's where I want to go. But if you guys want to talk about it and chat more about it, that's satisfactory. Did you want to say anything to it?
I have a process question, Mr. Chairman. So, after following up on the meeting, would it be possible for John to distribute the email addresses of the folks in the working group so we can have a some sort of dialogue between the groups?
That's my plan, is to take the signing sheet, update the email list that I currently have, and then send a quick summary as to what happened today. I'll confer with Rissom Johnson and Dave here, and you can expect something early next week.
Great.
Representative Johnson, also with a process question. I mean, you've instructed us to get consensus comments to John by 12/6, and I just feel that consensus means that we have an agreement or a defined goal. And again, it's the issues that were raised earlier, it's very difficult to talk about something when, I think we've stated fairly clearly, we don't think that there's a problem with the current structure. The current structure was tweaked a couple of years ago to address specifically the issues that were raised by the telephone companies and the League of Cities to try to encourage and spur additional competition. There is currently franchises that are being granted under the current structure. So
what's your question?
The consensus comments, if we don't have any comments, then are we not being participatory in this process? Or, you know, or if we do provide comments, does that infer some kind of support for this legislation or this reform?
Well, again, the idea, Mr. Carlson, is to move forward with, in a positive way, with some productive results for good public policy. You do what you need to do that. Mr. O'Reilly?
Representative Johnson, just in the area of process, I think there's at least three main interests represented at the table today. Telephone companies, the franchise holders today, and the city administrators. One possible way to proceed would be to ask each of the main groups of stakeholders to identify issues that they think need to be addressed, and then they could propose their reasoning for whatever solution they would like to see. If each of the three groups prepared a paper like that, they could share it with each other and then respond to each other's comments, and that could all be done offline, between now and the next meeting.
Now, it sounds like a reasonable process suggestion that gives some structure. Does anybody have any problem with that? All right, well, we're going to implement that as a suggestion then. Does everyone understand it?
No. What are you suggesting, a global response? Or I guess you'd have to be more specific.
Submitting them to John and then sharing them with the other parties?
Yes. In my idea, there are the three main groups: the cities, the telephone companies, and the cable companies. Those subset of the stakeholders could each get together and identify the issues that they think should be addressed in this public forum, and then declare their position on those issues, the reason why it's necessary and a good thing to do. Those papers then could be circulated to everybody on the working group. Each main constituency then could react to the statements of the other stakeholders. And if individual companies or an individual city wanted to do this on their own, I think they should be free to do that as well.
You might make a case that there's a fourth stakeholder group, which is the public access folks, are not necessarily always the same as the cities or the administrators.
And it actually sometimes are just individual citizens within the state of Minnesota that we're representing.
That it could be broadened, that by a certain date, anyone who wanted to identify issues and positions would be free to do that.
All right, very good. Representative Hoppe, do you have anything on hand?
Have a good afternoon, everybody.
All right, that'll do it for today. Thank you, everyone, for coming out.